This episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Brave New Coin. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check out BNC Pro. It's the all-in-one cryptocurrency management platform. It's a terminal-like experience that allows you to manage everything having to do with your cryptocurrency investments. You can track your profit and loss positions very accurately because you can import your trades directly from exchanges by linking up their APIs. You have flexibility to create all kinds of different holding types, whether you want to link your wallets or OTC exchanges specifically, any new assets that get listed in the market. It supports all that great stuff. You can do institutional or individual portfolio tracking with BNC Pro. It's really slick. And there's also a data news feed that brings all of Brave New Coin's excellent news analysis and external news analysis into the BNC Pro platform so that you can keep track of everything going on and affecting your portfolio. I think you'll like it. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check it out. And thanks to Brave New Coin for being a Ledger Status partner. Now here's the show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here with Josh Olswich. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
It's pretty good. I knew we had a little bit of news to cover today, and then you started making a list, and I was just like, holy crap, there's so much that's been going on, and yet our apathy seems to be at an all-time high.
Oh, yeah. My apathy, all-time high.
Yeah.
Multi-month high, all-time high.
that doesn't make the news less significant. I do think it's interesting that a lot of it didn't really impact price in a big way. Like, I don't think you can assign anything that's been going on with price with like something very specific news-wise. Maybe they'll make it up after the fact, but price-wise, I don't know that any of this has been super impactful in the short term. But there is a lot going on in a new sense that we want to talk about. Some of it we want to glaze right over quickly. Maybe we can start with that stuff and then move into the things that we think are more interesting. Starting with what I would say, what I want to spend the least amount of time on and move right through it is there's more Libra drama. Do you have like a TLDR that we can, you know, throw out there
put it in the bag? Yeah. Here's my actionable TLDR. I forget who said this, honestly. So hat tip to them. But there's some correlation to legacy people, to people who aren't in crypto, that if Libra gets like this golden stamp from Congress or is ever launched and it isn't instantly shut down, it's bullish for crypto in general, even though, you know, it's not what we think of as crypto, blah, blah, blah.
So basically, we're going to get raised up or pulled down depending on the direction of the various governments' push on Libra.
That's some people's thoughts, and again, you can agree or disagree with that. But that's sort of, I don't know, kind of makes sense to me.
Fair, especially everything but Bitcoin, but probably Bitcoin too, which would even be more annoying because it has so little to do with Bitcoin.
Yeah, and if you look at Q2, when the Libra stuff was launched... Yeah,
it had some price impact.
Yeah, I think so. As much as I hate to admit it, I think there was some definite... There's a definite correlation there. That was like the... I forget when the Head and Shoulders failed. I can see it on the chart. I can't remember the exact date, but... It was after the Binance stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it was during that same time. In terms of the specific Libra news, there's a handful of things most of the big organizations have been covering. PayPal and I think some other payment processor type of like node participants, whatever they're calling them, backed out, which mm-hmm. was interesting.
Or they're getting pressured to back out by
whichever regulators. Way they're no longer in. There's some additional regulatory stories coming out from multiple countries. Zuckerberg's going to be testifying in Congress about Libra specifically. Which that's interesting. I don't think he's done anything around Libra comments at all. And then And then the weirdest one is the Open Libra thing, which I don't even understand really the concept, but someone potentially scamming, certainly. Saying more people were in support of this concept than were because they came out and were like, yeah, I have nothing to do with this, or it was taken out of context in terms of the degree of involvement I have. Someone's coming up with this Open Libra concept, which I think we can mostly ignore, but I guess it was presented at DevCon.
Yeah. Now, Brian, be careful with that S word. It might trigger some people.
They might get upset if I call them a scammer.
If you call people or things scammers, they get upset.
I'm not calling them a scammer. I'm just saying that word has been used.
Right. Well, I think
if you put people on a big screen, like, and say they're in support of something that you're doing, and then they come out and say, like, oh, no, I'm not. you missed something there. So you need to work on that.
So Open Libra was a Libra fork that was presented at DevCon, but apparently doesn't even look like it's going to survive. It's dead on arrival,
basically. The origination idea, yeah. So let's go straight to DevCon and maybe some general Ethereum stuff going on. So DevCon's like the big Ethereum developer conference. Is this number 5, something like that?
I think so.
Everything I've seen is like it looks as weird as ever, but there's been some good, interesting presentations.
Are they biannual or annual DevCon?
I'm not sure. Maybe there's like one that's Western and one that's Eastern.
I know the next one's in Berlin in October, maybe next October or April. I don't know.
Yeah, Vitalik came out with a couple of posts about scaling Ethereum. There's still more drama around people saying like, oh, well, Ethereum was never meant to scale. That's what Ethereum people are now saying, which isn't really what they ever said before. But on the other side of that, now they're talking about a path towards scaling. One of the proposals that Vitalik has written looks like it would be significantly more backward compatible than some people thought. So to me, that's potentially bullish. And other news out of DEF CON, I'm not sure a whole lot. I liked Taylor Monahan or whatever her name is from MyCrypto. Mm-hmm. She gave what I thought, at least from like the bullet points that I saw, a very practical presentation that was like, we need to be making user-facing apps that are just good user experiences and happen to use crypto. I think the whole Ethereum development community needs to really latch onto that, because otherwise it's going to be really hard to get some of this stuff to take off if the user experiences are bad. So I like that they're pushing on that. Did you see anything out of DEF CON that you liked?
No, not really. But her argument was the same as Ted Livingston, the Kin guy. His argument was like, this stuff needs to have good UI. It needs to be intuitive. It needs to be like in the background, you know, and versus now where it's like you use MetaMask on your browser and you have to like do all this stuff. It's very like hobbyist oriented still, I think. Any of the DeFi stuff. DeFi stuff. Like, it's easy for you and I to use it. But I've had trouble using MetaMask, just like trying to send stuff off of it.
Well, I have trouble with everything. I have trouble with the Lightning Network.
Too, for sure.
I've noticed something recently. It's pretty annoying to try to get something off of Lightning back onto like a main chain, you know? I want to be able to send Lightning to someone that doesn't have Lightning. Like, that's something I would like to be able to do in an easy interface.
It's a separate ecosystem, you know? It's like,
I know it is, but I need the back and forth to be a little simpler. For me, like sending Lightning and taking it back to the origination wallet, I find to be challenging. I don't really know the answer there.
It sounds like you want like a Lightning escrow service. Maybe there's a business there. No, but back to DevCon, Vitalik did tweet out some posts that I haven't read yet, but highly recommended reading, because they, like you said, scaling thing. He talked about DeFi and ETH 2.0 stuff.
Yeah, I think they're the type of posts where if you have a long-term vested interest in Ethereum, they're going to be kind of your guidepost on what a success look like for, you know, Ethereum 2.0 and scaling and the potential for the future, and is Ethereum going to be toppled, all that kind of stuff. A lot of people are like very bearish on Ethereum fundamentally, and honestly, I think the development community, as much as we can give it a hard time, they have a huge advantage of interested parties in that ecosystem, and that's why anything to outpace it, it's going to have to just be a huge success. So I still think Ethereum has the best shot. They haven't blown it totally yet, but they could still blow it with the way the rollout goes with Ethereum 2.0. However, because of my own background with software and, in my opinion, the importance of backward compatibility, I think what Vitalik focused on with regard to making Ethereum 2.0 highly backward compatible will end up being a good move, even if there are other consequences from a performance or whatever standpoint.
Yeah, it's like when you're, what was it, PS3 or PS4? One of them wasn't backwards compatible, and I just never bought the next gen console.
People just say, well, I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to stay on the same system, never upgrade it, all those types of things.
Well, if you're a dApp developer and you see that it's not backwards compatible, I mean, I think you'd be pretty upset, because you basically either like you have the money and the time and the manpower to upgrade, or you're just left behind, you know?
Yeah. So in terms of moving on from Ethereum, I think. Oh, one other thing about Ethereum is the CFTC, like, I guess more formally clarified that they believe Ethereum is a commodity. Basically, they gave a green light towards a future of Ethereum on CME. I think that's probably a big deal, even though it was kind of already determined that that was going to be the case. This was like a, okay, this is the case. So we'll see.
So there's the SEC, which is the Securities Exchange Commission, and there's the CFTC, the Commodity and Future Trade Commission, right? Something like
that. Yeah, so the SEC said it's not a security, and now the CFTC has said it is a commodity. So it's like a non-assignment and then an assignment spread out by, I don't know how long it's been, 6 months or whoever, whatever.
So they didn't release it. They didn't release any like formal stuff. The new head of the CFTC, Heath Tarbert, which is a great name, by the way. I want to meet this guy. Heath Tarbert. I looked him up because I was researching, like, did he get paid off by the Ethereum people? That was my first thought. Because here's the thing. He's a super young guy. He's 43 and he's new. And the first thing he says about crypto is ETH is a commodity. I don't know. It was just super funny.
And this is crypto dad. Giancarlo's successor.
Correct. Giancarlo's successor. I looked him up. Super clean. What's it called? Funding, monies, whatever.
Yeah.
Always interesting to look into that.
For what it's worth, I always liked Giancarlo. I think he always said reasonable stuff.
Yeah.
For people that had been following the Ledger X drama and their lack of approval, there were some news stories that were published. Twitter accounts, the Ledger X CEO and COO, which are a husband and wife couple, they were like railing on the CFTC for essentially propping up, backed, and establishing blockers for anyone trying to beat back to the punch. And they went after Giancarlo. So that was interesting. I have no idea of any truth to any of the matter, but it was reported on in some places. And if you care about that type of drama, then you can.
It's a good time to bring up my apathy again. Apathy account.
It's kind of like, whatever, who cares?
Apathy count two.
And I mean, it's not like backed even hit the ground running, right? I mean, we finally got some data. This seems like a massive PR failure to me because they basically had very few people trading. Our last podcast guest, Philippe from XBTO, I think they were the first group to trade on the platform. But my understanding from what I heard from someone else is that they literally had no like institutional sales team going to recruit people to trade on day one on the backed platform. And what do you know? Like nobody was trading on day one on the backed platform. There was like, I don't know, 100 Bitcoin that went back and forth, something like that. And now, Josh, you looked it up. How many millions are there in volume in kind of the first week one trading?
I think it's 5 million in the first week, but
so basically nothing.
Yeah. But their highest day was 2 days ago, yesterday, and they broke. Well, they almost hit 2 million. But
this isn't the craziest thing in the world or anything. CME's volume is like this slow upward ramp. If you look from launch to kind of peak.
Well, that's actually deceiving, Brian, and I'll tell you why.
Because of contract price.
Right. So what you're looking at when you look on TradingView for CME, you see contracts, and one contract is 5 BTC. So in notional at the top when they launched, they actually had some really high notional volume, multi-hundred million dollar volume, I think. Maybe even in the billions. I'd have to double check the math on that. But even though it looks like the contract sizes were small, they actually had substantial volume, and they still do.
Well, there you go. But
that's a difference between CME and Bakkt as well, as CME launched at like the height of the bubble. Bakkt launched when we were sideways for 100 days. So
yeah,
that's another reason why there wasn't exactly a rush of volume there.
Yeah. Well, nevertheless, it's out. They'll probably have options as well. There's, one of the things about Bakkt is because it's through ICE and, the New York Stock Exchange and all that, people that want to trade it are basically already on those platforms, able to do so. The barriers to entry to trading there are pretty low relative to somewhere like LedgerX or somebody that's specifically for crypto. It's, you got to go and make a concerted effort to go trade there.
Even the VanEck 144A stuff, you have to get clearance to participate in that. Whereas, like you said, with the backed stuff, it's already plugged in to most people's, you know, brokerage stuff. The 144A is up to 550,000 bucks, buckaroonies. What is, how many BTC is that? 550. What's the current BTC price?
83.40 as of they've this
got,
moment.
They've got 66 BTC in there. Look at that. Look at them go.
Grats. So yeah, that's backed. Let's see. Where do we run from there? Let's just go right into more exchanges. Maybe we'll go down the line of regulatory embrace. So we can skip to Coinbase, who has made decisions in my mind that go absolutely counter to the actual news items. So first, they say they are increasing their fees for low volume participants to 0.5%, whether it's maker or taker. So if you do a limit order, typically people give you a discount or sometimes even zero fees. Coinbase Pro was zero fee for takers for a long time, and now it's 0.5% for a maker as for people in low volume. This is like anybody less than, I don't know, 50 grand a month or something. So that's most of their users, and that's just insane to me. Right after they do that, they release new mobile apps to try to encourage people to trade more, and I'm like, this is backwards, man. Like, don't release an app to make the user experience better right after you made it much more annoying to trade on your platform, charging 0.5% each direction, meaning for a round-trip trade, you're paying 1%, you know, plus the fact that you want to win on that trade. It's just insane to me.
Yeah, it's definitely discouraging smaller traders. I don't really trade there much anymore.
Well, that's the thing. It's like,
but now I'll trade there even less.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like if you spread out your money, if you don't actively trade every month all the time, like if you're just kind of in and out doing swing trades, it's pretty easy to be under those limits. You know, it's not a small amount of money, especially unlevered. Right. So those are actual coins that you're trading. So you got to be trading 5 Bitcoin or so a month to even hit their second tier. So that's kind of ridiculous to me, because I think that's the vast majority of traders.
Yeah, I don't know much about market structure or market whatever, but they changed the fee stuff a few months ago to they removed Maker, right?
I think
you mentioned that, but that was a while back.
They already changed their pricing to eliminate zero fees for makers, because I used to be able to do limit orders on Coinbase Pro for free, which was the only reason I really traded there. They took that away and made it more, a milder discount from their taker fees, but it was still like a little more reasonable, like maybe 0.2%. I don't remember exactly, but they've more than doubled it from whatever I thought it was. And they've more than doubled it from their competition. So like if you look at some of the other places where you can trade as an American citizen, like Kraken or Poloniex or Bittrex, those are all below like 0.25% for maker fees in particular. So if you're setting limit orders and whatnot, you can trade for, you know, more than 50% cheaper than you can now trade on Coinbase, which I don't get.
You know, it kind of feels like they have some rev sheet crunch coming, maybe for an IPO. I don't know, but that could be.
Maybe they just hope people will ignore this, but it doesn't seem like the type of thing that's just going to just, you know, grind on your reputation further. And I don't understand why they would do it. It's silly to me.
Well, if they want good numbers, if they want to appear as though they're like, you know, growing and they're adding coins, they're increasing fees to, you know, move up those profit margins, whatever. I don't know. And then the other day they were down for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
The BTC USD book was down. No mention of
issues, it. And there's been issues about, no mention. They don't have a status report or like actual talking about what happened, which is something they used to do. Like maybe just nobody cares. Maybe nobody's trading.
I honestly think at this point they're like, it's a lost cause, because the UI on the exchange is still garbage. The order book was completely disconnected. Was it last week? I think it was last week when the drop happened, right?
Nomad was all over this. The difference between like Coinbase proper and Coinbase Pro was a massive spread.
There were technical issues. Still no postmortem on that. No announcement on that when it happened. It was like you literally couldn't trade. And this was an extended period of time during volatility.
So here's a totally speculative but fun question. Do you think that Coinbase is currently eating in the cash reserves and running through a burn? Or do you think they're operating at a profitable level right now?
I don't know. It's hard to say because I don't see retail volume being massive.
Yeah.
On Coinbase.
I think they're probably eating into their reserves and they're like trying to grow product and spending a lot of money to do it. And probably not making up in revenue what they're like building.
They hit 30 million plus users or something a couple of weeks ago. Alistair Milne was talking about it.
But
I don't know where he got those numbers from.
Who cares about overall new users relative to
that's a first step, right? Like you can't buy anything on Coinbase unless you register on Coinbase. So
yeah, but they still need people to come back. Like how
foot
many
in the door syndrome. Foot in the door syndrome.
The
thing about the mobile app too, it's funny. It's like I don't know if it's called Monkey's Paw. There's this concept where it's like we'll give you something good, but there's also something bad. Didn't release an Android version, which is I'm not gonna say which phone I use, but I was disappointed that they didn't have an Android for Coinbase Pro.
That's pretty common for people to go iOS first. Just more people, more centralized place to download it, all that. So Coinbase is tacking onto this. A lot of places are starting to do it where they're offering interest for holding stable coins. Coinbase is offering 1.25% annual return on people that hold USDC. Funny enough, Binance is offering up to 16% on, is it, I thought it was BUSD, like whatever their stablecoin matrix is, or is there a Binance stablecoin now? I don't know, but
I thought it was USDT on Tron, right? I don't know. They made an announcement.
I don't know. It's 16% on, it's high on something.
It's massive.
Seemingly unsustainable. Yeah. But if that's stable, then you might as well go ahead and put your whole net worth on it and not bother with the stock market.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
The 16% a year is pretty good. That's not financial advice. I'm just saying, if you guarantee me 16% a year, like I might just call it a day.
Well, I was talking to the legacy guy and he's like, okay, what's the trade here? Do we get everything off of USDT? Because like sometimes that's a signal that this stuff's in trouble. You know, they're trying to like prop something up here.
Problem or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea. It's a weird number. Binance is doing stuff. They're still trying to add more coins on Binance US, which, if I understand correctly, Binance still has their like historically relatively low fees. So this Binance Coinbase battle, it's like, I don't know. It's like people cutting off their own arms and then still trying to throw punches.
If I had to guess, Binance is going to quickly list anything that Coinbase has. Why not, right? Like, that's your competitor.
Yeah. All you have to do is do like a cursory, oh yeah, sure, we did some stuff on this. And Coinbase is obviously in ask for forgiveness mode. They've jumped the shark on what they're willing to list. So why shouldn't Binance just list all that too? Plus BNB, of course.
Right.
BNB is going to be the toughest one for them. I don't really understand the deal there. But they've got a lot going on. Let's hit up some hot drama. This was something where I jokingly replied because I was like, was this really public? And then it all got deleted. So Binance, or CZ specifically, quote tweeted something that was of an Alipay thing, which is a merchant processor attached to Alibaba, all of it's Chinese controlled. And it was like, hey, by the way, you can buy crypto using Alipay on Binance. And then Alipay, their actual Twitter account, was like, no, you can't. They said that to CZ. And then Larry from the block like quoted that and did a three-tweet thread and was like, you can't, but you can. There's some backdoor relationships. They're all letting this happen. There's some government employees that are like giving the false nod while they say no on public. And then CZ was like, for the good of your company and the ecosystem, you shouldn't say that. I was like, maybe it should have been a DM, bro. And then all the tweets disappeared. But of course, you know, the crypto Twitter world screenshotted it, including Larry's boss, Mike Dudas, screenshotted the whole thing. It was like, this is the state of crypto. It's like, okay, well, that's a thing.
You know, God bless Larry. God bless the block, right? You know, what would we do without them? Just an amazing journalist, amazing story.
Yeah, so, I mean,
again, I think apathy count three here because I don't care, you know?
I guess they jumped the shark a little bit there because, like, now it's out. It's not like you're going to put that back in the bag. I kind of get the perspectives on this. Like, it's not bad for crypto for people having access to it. And if Alipay has, like, a wink and a nod policy, then sure, go for it. At the same time, it's not like it's an unreportable thing. It's a story worth existing. It's got some nuance required, though, like, where you don't necessarily want to get all the way back to those Chinese regulators that then feel like they have egg on their face and have to start going by the letter of the law, whatever. Some people said there's some Eastern versus Western policy considerations here. In my mind, like, the block has their Genesis thing. This should have been, like, for their paying subscribers, that type of, like, hey, this is out there, guys. This is just for you. We're not telling the whole world. But, you know, then they tweeted it instead.
I don't really care. Again, yeah. Like, it's just the constant backpatting and muckraking and fun pot drama, stirring. Though. And it's just like, it's like, I don't care.
Fun drama. I think it's safe to say CZ was a little out over his skis, tweeting too much there.
it reminded me of the Chain Reorg stuff. It's like, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't tweet every thought that comes into our head or every single business decision.
Yeah, throwback to when CZ debated whether or not they could just, do a chain reorg on Bitcoin itself, which would be devastating fundamentally.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Good old Binance.
Yeah. Let's keep with exchange hot drama here, Josh, and go on to Bitfinex, another one of our favorites to appreciate all the news that they experience in the world. They got tagged with a lawsuit. My perspective is this lawsuit seems largely ridiculous, but has some serious claims in it at the same time. This is a class action, so this means there's, like, people that were affected and as a group are suing, and that has kind of all its own, you know, legal components to it. What's the scoop on what this suit is bringing toward Bitfinex?
I mean, from what I could tell, there's a class action alleging that USDT manipulated Bitcoin price, and they want $1 trillion in damages. So, good luck to them. It's from the same lawyers who fought against CSW in Florida. I think this seems to be just a massive PR thing
for the lawyers.
Yeah, I mean, even if just, like, on face value, this thing is all ridiculous, but I don't know, it's, again, apathy count four, like, whatever. God bless them, let them go for it, you know, let them get that $1 trillion in damage.
Yeah. So I gave Larry a little bit of a hard time, but I think Larry actually covered this pretty decently by saying, like, they could have done better. This suit was not well put together. Larry pointed that out. He's been very critical of Bitfinex and Tether and everything. But he, like, highlighted some reasons why this lawsuit's kind of junk. Like, they just put some misinformation in there, et cetera. That said, there's also some real stuff in here. You never know what a court will do. Like, courts can be pretty surprising sometimes. So it's worth mentioning that, like, even if something seems ridiculous, it doesn't mean that it'll stay that way.
Yeah, it just seemed like a giant fishing expedition, even though that isn't the right term for it. Just like, we're going to throw a lawsuit. Going to throw a lawsuit at the wall and see if it sticks, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And that's,
and then there was also the New York AG stuff, the court case, the active court case.
Oh,
the,
yeah. They said, deal,
they said that, yeah, they what, didn't need to, Bitfinex didn't need to provide documents on the appeal or something. I don't know. Again,
so that, like, was a win for Bitfinex.
It's a win for Bitfinex. Yeah. I don't know. I think they will continually be targeted, not only because they're the biggest stablecoin, but because of the extra legal things that they've done historically, partly out of need, partly out of, trying to save themselves.
So, yeah. Coming off the brink.
It is what it is. I mean, that's par for the course.
Yeah, if you have two bad decisions to make, I mean, you might as well make the one that allows you to survive, in my opinion. Doesn't make it great, but
right. Doesn't make
what
it
are
right.
you going to do?
Yeah.
Whether you're an enterprise fund manager or a retail trader, buying and selling cryptocurrencies successfully requires price discovery you can rely on. Brave New Coin's liquid indices provide trusted US dollar prices for Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Ripple. Featuring end-of-day or intraday outputs, you can count on the BLX, ELX, and XRPLX for accurate US dollar pricing for smart contract oracles, settlement price discovery, net asset valuation, and performance analysis. Visit BraveNewCoin.com to find out more.
Yeah. So if people think we've already covered a lot of news, don't worry. There's more.
Quadriga. Okay, Quadriga. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Let's do Quadriga real quick because this one was weird, crazy, whatever. Quadriga founder died. If y'all remember this whole story from earlier in the year,
allegedly.
Canadian exchange. Allegedly died. Nevertheless, somehow the widow has access to a lot of money and she's paying $9 million to victims of the Quadriga scandal, which made international news, but was a big story in Canada, including the U.S., etc.
I mean, it's like one of the only Canadian exchanges.
Yeah,
I don't even know of another one.
There were others, but it was one of two or three of the biggest. I think it was the biggest at one point. Maybe got surpassed once like their slow deposits and all that started kicking in, meaning that the scam was on by then.
And once people really dug into it, they realized, oh, he was probably trading on BitMEX with lots of money.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Nevertheless, the widow's shelling out $9 million. I don't know a whole lot more, but that's some follow up on a case. That's good. These things last longer in court than they last in the public spectrum, that's for sure.
Oh yeah.
What's the privacy coin stuff? There's more delistings going on.
Yeah, so this delisting stuff started a few years ago with the Japanese financial JSA, JFA. I forget their agency's alphabet soup. But the privacy coins started to get delisted from exchanges in Japan. And now they're getting delisted from exchanges in South Korea. And as it is, like XMR isn't on Coinbase anyway, but Zcash, the privacy functions, you can't actually use those on Binance or Coinbase or Gemini. So, you know, it's already neutered from a privacy perspective. But lawmakers, regulators want you to go a step further and just delist this stuff. I forget the exact regulator, FAFTA maybe, F or something. Again, another alphabet soup. Yeah. Yeah. Apathy count 17, whatever it is.
Regulator.
Yeah. Did an XMR article this week. Check it out. The biggest thing with XMR is they're releasing a new consensus algorithm, which I think is risky and exciting. Mm. They're trying to permanently remove ASICs from the chain.
This is a consistent battle they've had.
Yeah, historically they've adjusted the algorithm slightly, like every couple months, every 8 months or whatever it was, to try to continually like kick ASICs off the chain. And this is a bid to basically make CPU mining more efficient than ASICs or GPU mining. So kind of take things back to its roots, its mining roots, just historically for proof of work. And this random X thing is coming November 30th.
Josh, this is very, very bottom things. The Monero chart relative to Bitcoin just looks fundamentally broken.
I know, that's what I said. Did I post it in the chat? Maybe not, but it's got trounced this year. It's so far below the 200. It hasn't hit the 200 moving average in like 200 days. It's been
It has to go up like 30% to hit the 20-week moving average. It has not been above the 20-week moving average for more than like a fake out breakout week since April 2018. Like it's been real bad. It looks like sell pressure just cannot be continued. Like volume is declining while price is declining. Usually that establishes, you know, some bullish divergences, blah, blah, blah. But it looks bad. Monero looks real bad.
There's a multi-month RSI divergence, bullish, multi-month volume divergence, bullish. But you can't, in your right mind, think it's not going to just keep going. You know what I mean? Maybe this
It's on a place where it either finds a bid here, which is non-existent currently based on price action, volume, et cetera, or it's going to work its way. Its lows were around $38. This is off the USD pair now, but right now it's at like 54. You know, if everybody knows what these charts all look like, where they bottomed, they went up, and then now they're going down again. Bitcoin has not gone down near as much as some of these, but, you know, like you look at Ethereum and you look at some other alts, they like came much further down towards their prior bottoms, but they kind of held the previous consolidation that broke out to the upside. That it is on the precipice of that. If it loses it, it's going to fully retest the low, low, lows, which were around $38. if it breaks that, like, Monero's in big trouble, like sub $30 type of trouble.
It's basically at its 161 level for ETH, or its 4K level for BTC. It's definitely key level here.
This is one of those things in crypto where it's so sad because it's like fundamentally one of the most logical coins to be bullish on. Mm-hmm. Price action wise, it just cannot find a bid. Like, it's just not there.
And that could be because of botnet mining. Now, hash rate doesn't support this theory, but historically they do have a lot of malware mining. What's it called?
People, I forget the term. People hack websites, and then they use these hacked websites. Every time the page is loaded, they run basically mining algorithms. Very, very, very tiny hash rate per page load or whatever, but that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's either that or cloud software now that they're hitting, or crypto locker stuff, like all sorts of things. But that maybe is applying continued sell pressure as well.
Yeah, because people that are scamming or criming or criming, whatever they're doing, they're selling immediately into other things. So it's almost like the same effect as miner pressure where someone's constantly cashing out.
Right.
When you have zero cost basis, you have no reason not to cash out immediately.
Right. But that theory isn't really supported well based on hash rate, but yeah, that's my theory.
I would love to see XMR do better, but so far it's not showing it. Very bottom things of me to be saying. Just throwing that out there. It's going to be up 100% in like a week because I said it's fundamentally broken. I remember when people were saying that about Ethereum, that it was like dead bottom.
I mean, as it is, the percentage of total, so ETH has a, or not ETH, XMR has a permanent tail emission. So it's going to hit it. The block reward continues to decline until it hits 0.3 XMR per block, and it just stays there forever. So it doesn't have a capped total supply, but the issuance of the percentage per year or whatever is continuing to decrease. I think it's like at 3 or 4% right now. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. XMR fundamentally is sound, but just not standing up. You know, another thing is there was this issue where you could send fake XMR to an exchange, and that could be playing a role here. We don't know. Like, you can't audit the blockchain.
Yeah, we still don't fully know what's going on there, but somebody could be fake printing or fake selling fake XMR, which is a very scary thought fundamentally. Like, that's chain broken type of thoughts and completely unverified, but just the rumor of it is scary.
So it was patched way before it was reported widely, but and you can't like mess with the chain stuff on chain, but you can mess with exchange ledgers basically and make it look like you have way more XMR than you do. So maybe that was playing a role, continues to play a role. I don't know. High speculation there.
A lot of speculation. Just
want people. Right, let's move on to IRS stuff for the U.S.
This is probably the biggest news of the week. That said, it's the first tax guidance since 2014. It's basically like a Q&A. Is that the way you would say it? It's like, here's some information on various topics. Some of it was good, some of it was meh, and some of it was instant trash. Where do you want to start?
I want to start by saying I didn't read it fully, right? Apathy count 30-35. I read the part that everyone got upset about with regards to the forks and whatever, but I don't know. Like, they have to say something eventually, and of course it's going to be bad. Like, what do you expect? So it is what it is. That's why I have an accountant. It'll continue to get updated, and hopefully they'll figure it out eventually. But they were trying to say you have to pay taxes on forks and airdrops in a way that makes it really predatory for people. And just unrealistic.
Yeah. Well, the one that was most controversial, a lot of stuff was just kind of reaffirmations of the way people were interpreting their previous guidance. The one that was the most controversial is there's a section about like airdrops and hard forks where it reads as if you're supposed to assign having made profit at the price of the date of the fork or airdrop, which is from the very beginning, basically impossible, because how do you assign the price immediately? There's almost no liquidity on any forks, and people can fork something like Bitcoin basically against your will. So therefore, they're creating a tax burden on you when you do nothing. You take no action, but because there was a fork of Bitcoin that you didn't even participate in, you may have a tax liability because of the fork itself. It just won't hold up, in my opinion. It's like one of those things. It's like, okay, you don't know what you're talking about. This can't stand. Yet at the same time, we really don't know what they'll do in real life in terms of trying to account for that. Mm-hmm. But the fork slash airdrop guidance in particular was a dumpster fire.
And they just released today something I'm seeing just now. They're adding a question to tax returns. At any time during past year, did you receive, sell, send, exchange, or otherwise acquire any financial interest in any virtual currency? So they're adding that to the 1040 form.
Really?
Yeah. So that's going to, people are going to love that.
Yeah.
It's going to get to the point. It's going to get to the point where they're going to say, please list all addresses that you have. Like, that's where it's headed.
That's going to be really hard, though. Like,
well, I mean,
if you
they
use
don't care,
a new address, right? If you use a new address for every like real transaction, for instance, which is good practice. Ugh.
This is, I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah, this is live on Coinbase, like basically out now. Mm-hmm. Not Coinbase, CoinDesk, whatever.
CoinDesk, Cointelegraph, everybody, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's got it. The IRS will now ask if you own crypto in the most widely used tax forms. So the Form 1040 is literally the one pager that you can fill out. Mm-hmm. Man, that sucks.
I mean, I already pay taxes on my stuff, so it's fine. But it's headed in a direction where it's just continually surveillance state sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And if OFAC can list addresses and that you shouldn't send crypto to, it's going to get to the point where you just have to, you know, please list all your addresses with wallets that have crypto in it.
Yeah, what multiple do you think you get in terms of your auditability if you click yes on that bad boy?
Oh yeah, I think it's a separate pile completely.
Yeah, you just go in the whole new pile. It's like grab 1 in 3 of these people, and if they didn't click that button, then you know audit like 1 in 50.
Yeah,
that's,
I agree.
That's brutal. Sucks for us.
Yeah, sure does.
Well, there's your news of the day, folks, and our live reactions of ouch. I don't like that at all. And to be fair, I try to be as conservative as possible. I just don't like I don't want to be audited. Auditing's that everybody I've ever heard being audited, if you pay to every penny of your taxes in the most conservative way, it still freaking sucks because you have to spend so much time on it. So
yeah,
just right, tagging a box. Yeah.
That's the news low, definitely. I don't really think there's anything else. I'm sure there's more, but I did a Q3 review article. Check that out.
Q3 review on bravenewcoin.com, or was it on somewhere else?
BNC, yeah. Even if you BNC. Hate me, if you hate me as a person and everything I do, read this article. You know, it's a good one. There's some good data in there.
Oh, that's good. I don't know how I didn't see that one yet. I get your tweets. I see your stuff. I read everything. I watch everything. I missed your Q3. So hey, this is going to be a good read for me.
That's Twitter for you.
All right. Well, let's talk about why we're apathetic. And I will start by saying almost none of this has been like, it's not like news comes out and then there's a reflection of news in price. It's just all the price stuff seems to be, to me, more driven by, I don't know if it's legacy market macro or just the chart is the chart and it needed to do something. But I'm not seeing like very much news-based action. I'm just seeing price action that's kind of operating in its own accord. That said, you know, we had the big breakdown from the mid-9Ks, and then we are consolidating under the 200 today. As of this moment, at least, we're being kind of rejected by the 200-day moving average, which is the most significant moving average to me. What are you seeing out there?
Sorry, did you say the 200-day moving average? Is that what you said?
Yep, 200-day moving average, which I've been watching very closely, and we retested it because it's right around 86.50, something like that. And you know, we spiked above it, and now we're working below it. So it looks like we've been firmly rejected off the 200-day moving average as of today. But we're still kind of in the consolidation area under the main triangle between like 7,800 and 8,600. Which is $1,000 range, but still, it's like where we spent the last 2.5 weeks since we dropped a very large amount.
Yeah, so we spent 2 weeks after we dropped out of the triangle ranging, arguably making like Adam and Eve or Adam structure here on the bottom.
Yeah, potential double
multiple
bottom.
Multiple time frames, W-ing, etc.
And then what we had last night for us was a fake out breakout to the upside and then a big dump.
Yeah, so last night around midnight was a 5%, what ended up being a 5% down move after being rejected at the 200 daily moving average. So yeah, I mean, 85 for me is like the critical level for the weekly to close above the 8.5. 8.7 is the 200, I think. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's back in the range. I don't know. Like if we break, it's same thing. If we break 7.7, it's bad. If we break 8.5, it's good.
Yeah.
I don't really
so if you look at things from a weekly Keesian perspective using the cloud, it looks like we're just spending our second week getting rejected from the underside of the weekly Keesian. If you look at the daily, it looks like we're getting rejected by the 200-day moving average. And also there's some cloud stuff there with the daily Tinkin that we're getting rejected by. So we're definitely like on the underside that we need to recapture. If you look at the 3-day, we're like getting rejected by the bottom of the cloud. Those are all bearish things. Like every single one of those things that I just said is bearish from a trend following strategy perspective. All of those say there's more downside if we don't like save the weekly or like reclaim the daily, that type of verbiage. You disagree with any of that?
I agree with that. I do like the weekly candle structure though. So last week after the big down move, it was a bit of a long legged doji that kind of signifies that like buyers and sellers are coming to an equilibrium.
Yeah.
They were AKA bearish. Momentum is waning, aka bottom things.
It's a tricky one, right? Because, you know, like the bearish momentum is waning, but at the same time, there's not a big and quick bid. Like it's a slow, if we bottom here, it's officially looking a little bit like a slow bottom, not like a fast one.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like we don't need immediate V bottoms on every 10% drop. But this week, like I'd love to see us above 8.5, which would be above Kiju and above the previous week's candle wick. That would be like candle confirmation territory. But as long as it's green, as long as the weekly close is green, I think we're fine. There's like this trident pattern on the wicks on the weekly too, which I like.
What's a trident pattern?
It's like where we get a low, a lower low, and then a higher low on the wicks.
Gotcha.
I don't know. It just says anything below 8.1 has just been bought up pretty aggressively, but it's at a really odd spot on the weekly because it's kind of a no man's land.
Yeah. And but the way I look at that weekly too, it's like if we close above about 80.50, then the body of this weekly close will engulf the prior. So that's like, it's not awful. It's just, it's not like, it's not a strong recovery yet. We're not in that zone yet. We really need to clear on the weekly, like you said, 85, 8,600. Pretty definitively. And last night we were on our way. That's what kind of bummed me out is because we looked ready to reclaim the 200, even made a push towards it. And then we just got spiked down. It looks like a liquidity pool, the swing failure pattern folks would say that that was a liquidity pool over 8680, 8700. It got up to about 8820 and then got hammered down hard. Now you got to see where's this daily close, where's this weekly close.
Yeah, it's working on a 4-hour edge to edge trade. The daily key Tenkin is still way above us here at 8.9. The daily Kijun's still at 9.5, which is 12% away. So I don't know. Yeah. Like there isn't anything here that's like super bear. Obviously, getting rejected isn't bullish on yesterday's 5% move. And that daily structure doesn't look great either. But previously we had a W look pretty good. I don't know. Like
I expressed some price opinions for someone that was writing an article. And I said during that, I'm basically still in the same spot now, in that we have to reclaim this daily 200, kind of these daily levels. If we do, I think we'll push up back into where we consolidated in the mid 9Ks. If we clear that, it's like bull market continuation. So your big move is kind of the 9,800 to 13K plus. That's your big move if you want to wait. I think there's also potential for a big move under like 7,700-ish, whatever the lows are on this consolidation we've been in the last couple of weeks. So it looks like we're just consolidating under the 200. If we lose that, then we have our push down into like the 6Ks, see where we can catch a bid, that kind of thing. So it's a matter of finding out, like, where do you want to be in? Where do you want to be out? We're in a large consolidation range right now, and you should probably make your decisions if you're wanting to trade this based off mid time frame price analysis, not higher time frame price analysis where you can get whipsawed a lot.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I was just looking at, if you look at the candle on February 24th this year, it reminds me very much of what happened yesterday. We had this Adam and Eve double bottom looking like it was going to resolve up at 4K basically, and it got instantly rejected. And it took us...
And then we ground up from there.
Yeah, it took us... what is this? It took us a month.
Yeah, it was a month of like small daily candle grinding.
But that whole... You know, I see a lot of people comparing 2018 to 2019 or whatever, you know. But the difference is the 2018 triangle took 300 days to resolve, 330 days. This triangle resolved in 90 days. The bottom on 2018, 2019 took 120 days to resolve. This bottom should take less than 120 days to resolve, you know? So I think the fractals are definitely compressed. You can argue they're similar, sure, but I think they're definitely compressed. So like what I'm seeing on the daily from February is what I'm seeing like on the 4 hour now. So again, that just echoes like these are similar, but much quicker this time.
Yeah, I feel like this is a mini macro market cycle though, like a it's certainly non-retail. I agree with everyone that's saying we're really not seeing retail interest in Bitcoin at any of this. Like we probably are, it seems like if above 10K didn't really get people interested again, then it's going to require new highs and like, oh crap, you know, Bitcoin's still a thing, that kind of stuff. So
yeah. And the Google Trends.
Yeah, the Google trend.
Completely.
Yeah. Like the search results, people, it's just not back yet. The market is not back yet in terms of interest. Price is a different thing, but there's enough money in the ecosystem to make the price move quite a bit, as we've seen on a range between 3K and 14K.
Yeah, it does feel like people are just sloshing stuff around. You know, the same. It's like the same 500 people in a city go out to eat, and and it's like... it's the same 500 people trading crypto, you know, just like moving money around. Another thing I want to mention, though, is the on-chain stuff. So for BTC, transactions and addresses are flat. They have been flat since August. But NVT and MVRV, which are inverted metrics based on on-chain metrics, have been declining, which is actually bullish, which says that the utility at this price continues to increase, even though on-chain stuff is flat. So if on-chain stuff stays flat and price goes down, MVRV and MVT should decline as well.
Is the idea that that's a leading indicator?
That's the idea, yeah. Generally, if historically, like if NVT is below X level, it's bullish, it's like a buy signal. If MVRV is below 1, it's a buy signal. If it's above 3, it's a sell signal. And it's 1.6 right now. So
here's a late show spin. I need to ask you about this one. The tax form question, does that just raise awareness for crypto? Do people say like, the IRS is asking questions about whether I've done something? What is virtual currency? Do we see enormous amounts of Googling come January about what virtual currency is?
I don't think so. I think it just, I think it tells people who are like sort of in like retail, people who are, you know, they have like $10 in crypto or something. They're like, all right, I'm just going to get rid of this because I don't have to deal with this tax stuff, you know? I think it's more bearish than bullish, but I don't know. It's not good. Definitely not good. The walls are closing in, as I like to say.
The walls are closing in.
Let's look at ETH too, because ETH BTC was at a pretty big level, a horizontal, and it got rejected.
It got smacked.
Pretty handedly. Yeah. And ETH also got smacked pretty hard. It was looking pretty good at 194, and now it's at 181. That was another 5% move, right? 10% almost on
more,
that move.
Yeah, more. It's down, ETHUSD is down 6% on the day, but the daily open was below its high of the day, so its high to low move is pretty significant. Daily versus the dollar, it looks like it got just smacked down by a red cloud, if you're looking
at it. Yeah, it does. It really does. And that TK cross is bearish again. That looks like
potential continuation downward.
Yeah, it does. I was getting pretty bullish on it because it was looking like it was set up for that edge to edge from 190 to 255.
Yeah.
But now
I'm not hating Ethereum relative to BTC from both trend following strategies that I utilize, which are a combination of moving averages and then also the cloud. I have both of them on my messy chart since
you have to legally as the podcast partner have to say that you use the cloud.
Hey man, right? I like the cloud. I like the cloud. It's you know, you always got to like figure out where do you have the most comfort.
Sure, yeah.
And for me, it's like general health of the market. I really love using the cloud as like a primary screening tool, finding targets, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like just very simple trend following, I love the 20-day and I love the 200-day. I just love them. And so like I use both, but I would say I have the 20 and 200 on my chart more than I have the cloud. And if I have the cloud, it's always the doubled cloud because I want to see like how's price responding to the cloud? How's it responding to Keygen? Is the cloud green or red? I like answering those types of questions, knowing those types of things. And in a ETH BTC sense, I'm still pretty bullish on both fronts, but I don't know. We have to see what kind of strength comes in. Like it's failing a potential breakout here. Like it really should have had a little more strength off of 0.022-ish, and it just kind of went to 0.023 and then failed. And I thought maybe, like I thought it had enough to maybe get to 0.025. And it doesn't look like people are interested in that right now. We'll have to see how it shapes up for the rest of the week.
My secret for trading ETH is use the 12-hour time frame. And 12-hour cloud has been bullish since October 4th. And the 5200 on the 12-hour is getting ready for a bullish cross. And it hit the 200 on the 12-hour on this dump at 0.0215.
On the 200 EMA.
Right, so I guess it would be the 100 on the daily, right?
Well, it's not as linear with EMA. That's why I don't like them. SMA, a perfect blend, a perfect average. I'm an SMA maximalist, sir. hey, you know what? I want to give a shout out because there are a couple of alts that have done just crazy well. I'm still not in ZRX, but we talked about that on the last show, and it has continued to catch a bid. Is there news going on there, you think, like in some of these altcoins? Or is there enough news to like really sustain these moves? ZRX, for instance, like it's really pushed through the dumps, the pumps, all of the above. It's like it's got some very bottomy looks about it, like its trend reversal zone is near, over about 3,500 sats to me. Is, I mean, from a cloud perspective, from a 200-day moving average perspective, from a horizontal level perspective, that's like a trifecta zone, 3,500 sats, where I'm interested in buying that as a positive bullish trend relative to Bitcoin, which I've just not seen a lot of that in any coin, but it looks that way on ZRX to me right now. Am I crazy?
No, I mean, it's 2x from the bottom. I have no clue what's going on from a news perspective, if anything.
Yeah.
I don't
volume's
know.
Volume's there. It's interesting. It's interesting. That's all I'm saying. Not all alts are the same. Like if you look at total dominance and alts generally, like ZRX looks a lot stronger than most.
But it's like a lottery ticket. Yeah, these are lottery tickets.
There's some diamonds in the rough out there. That
look, I don't know if I'd say that.
There's some
winning and losing lottery tickets out there.
Maybe you can shine them and find gold.
Maybe they're just pyrite.
Yeah.
No, I... But one thing we didn't talk about was the MakerDAO is releasing multi-collateral DAI on November 18th, which will most likely include BTC as part of that package. And I was just looking at the Maker USD chart on Bitfinex, and it hit 37, 38 bucks, 40 bucks last night. I don't know why. Somebody's dumping it with no volume, and there's just nothing on the or bid side, I guess. Really weird. I don't know. I haven't seen anybody talk about this.
Yeah.
Maker, we didn't even talk about the crypto whatever council that rated all these coins, but Maker was definitively to this self-regulatory agency, a security. So that's really why it's not really listed anywhere. Mm. But yeah, interesting.
Well, it's not surprising that somebody controlling a stablecoin asset is going to be a security because one entity basically has to have that control.
So. Yeah, I agree.
All right. Let's leave it there. I don't know what to make of stablecoin securitization. I know the one that I was interested in, and they really went the extra mile trying to get like some information and clarity from the SEC before they launched, was Basis. And then they refunded everybody's money because they were like, yeah, we can't do it. It's just a security. It's all we can get out of it. So until somebody like proves otherwise, that's my assumption for most stable coins.
Yeah, if you're messing with the supply and you're controlling governance, how is it not a security?
Yeah, agreed. I think most coins probably are. All right, let's leave it there. We got some sweet on-air breaking news that was bitter tasting.
Sure was, Brian. Sure was.
So let's go cry into our pillows tonight, and hopefully Bitcoin doesn't get savaged too much by it. But you don't care. That's how we started this call. Before we even recorded, you were like, up or down, I'm just going to trade, right?
That's right. Like, that's why, you know, I present this thought experiment to many people. If you're on a deserted island and you're given the choice between a chart and all the news that's ever happened or is happening, what are you going to pick?
Chart.
Exactly. Like, I don't care. You know, the news can happen, but I can trade the chart. You know, I can't trade the news. I can't, at least a lot of people can. I can't trade news well. I trade the chart well. Yeah. Anyway.
There you go. There's your Carpe Noctem wisdom of the day. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Go to bravenewcoin.com to see everything they've got going, and especially Josh's Q3 review, which I've been scanning while we've been talking since I missed it. It's got an incredible amount of interesting charts in it. Check out BNC Pro, which is launching really soon. It's pretty cool. Subscribe to the Brave New Coin newsletter. Get everything they got going on there. One of the few sites in the crypto space that I just always feel like is putting out good stuff. Thanks to them for being a Ledger Status and LedgerCast partner. Go to ledgerstatus.com for my stuff. Subscribe to this podcast. Hey, you know what we never do? We never ask for ratings, but we would love you to rate it in iTunes, all that good stuff. That helps. You'd be shocked. All right. Thanks, Josh. We'll catch you next time.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards.